WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As the end of the millennium draws near, we keep hearing a lot about postmodern, or just POMO, a label that seems to apply to everything from architecture to birthday parties. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been tracking the phrase and wants to know, when did modernism end and how can we tell?
We used to know what modernism was, or at least when it was. It has to do with Picasso and Stravinsky and Mies van der Rohe and Virginia Woolf. But at some point since then, they started to roll the period backwards. People began saying that modernism started 70 years earlier with Flaubert and Bentham, or they put it back with Diderot and Condorcet in the 18th century, which, by the way, has now itself been redefined so that it begins around 1660. Or earlier still, a couple of years ago, people stopped talking about the Renaissance and started calling it the early modern period. It's hard to tell where it's all going to end, or I suppose I should say, where it's all going to begin. I asked a medievalist friend, okay, so who's the last pre-modern? Chaucer? Chaucer, she said. Oh, no, a remarkably modern figure. All right, I said, well, how about William the Conqueror? Well, yeah, I guess, she said, at least before he crossed the Channel. I suspect that one reason for this period creep is that the longer the modern age is, the greater the crash it makes when it goes down. Depending on where they're coming from, critics and philosophers locate the symbolic end of the modernist period at different moments: the appearance of Philip Johnson's AT&T building in New York, the publication of Roland Barthes' SZ, the first Steve Martin album, the one where he's wearing an arrow on his head. There was an article in the New Yorker recently that said that modernism ended with the Tawana Brawley case. Whatever the date, though, everybody seems certain that modernity is a thing of the past, along with all its fellow travelers. The narrative is unraveled, the author is dead, the Enlightenment project is toast, and history is history. Of course, I suppose people in every age like to think of themselves as living a millennial moment. We stand on the high peak between the ages, is how Marinetti put it 75 years ago, and you can find people who proclaim more or less the same thing in every period going back to Hesiod. Still, it isn't every generation that gets to live at the brink of an honest-to-God millennium. And I don't know that any other age has thought of the zeitgeist in such an exclusively retrospective way. People don't say, from now on, only never again. Hence the passion for that suffix post. We are postmodern, posthumanist, postindustrial, postliberal, post-Christian, post-structuralist, post-feminist, post-colonial. A writer in the American Scholar not long ago announced that we'd entered the age of post-culturalism, and I'm sure there are plenty of other posts hovering just over the lintel. I have this image of everybody shuffling backwards toward the millennium under a banner that bears the device, been there, done that. All these names that begin with post and neo, it's as if we ran out of language all of a sudden, so there's nothing for it but to recycle the old words with prefixes tacked onto them. But that's the mark of the postmodern. As Frederick Jameson pointed out, it's all pastiche, old signs in new bottles. Portman Hotel lobbies, the Plymouth Prowler, Neo Disco, Blue Velvet, Combustible Edison. It can be a subtle business even trying to figure out what time it is. As Wired magazine explained the difference, a modernist always wore a tie with a jacket, a postmodernist throws a well-tailored jacket over a t-shirt. It was the well-tailored that struck me there. That's the great paradox of the postmodern, after all. Here's this epical shift in the basic condition of being, and you have to have an eye for a lapel even to recognize that it's taking place. Or maybe it's just a linguistic problem. Maybe people have just gotten a little confused about prefixes. You have the feeling that post doesn't really mean after anymore, the way it does in post-war, post-mortem, post-deb. Now it means something closer to once more without feeling. And when you come to think of it, we don't use the prefix pre the way we used to either. We've got pre-owned cars, pre-approved loans. They announce pre-boarding, and there are already people getting on the plane. It's as if all times are present at once, the effect that critics like to describe as the always already there. Somebody described Beck as the post-Neil Young, and I suppose you could say that Cyndi Lauper is the pre-Madonna. But then a certain confusion about time has always been a fin de siècle condition. In the words of that eminent proto-postmodernist Charles Jenks, it's the end of the century, and things are getting complicated.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center and editor of a new collection of essays called The Future of the Book.